If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas, you'd think they'd be able to follow that cable right down through the middle of Krakistan Pass. They smoked me out, they got me running, then they stopped coming. What made them give up on the chase? They better take a look around, get their nose to the ground, or they'll find themselves staring again at my face. And don't mention this to the bushes, and I hate to talk out of school, but it seems kind of queer to leave me standing here. Is America that easy to fool? Is this the exception or is it the rule? I thought Bush would follow, Mama. His big talk is hollow. I'm coming home now, will you fix me some chow? Wait, I think I'm losing my signal. Let me move over this hill. Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? 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 Hello, Mama, it's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good, now I'm praying. I thought Bush would come looking, but I guess I'm off the hook. Even though I am to blame, he went off to Iraq, hadn't come back. I heard they arrested old Saddam Hussein. It's hard to decipher the Bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war. Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burqa, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court. I should be in heaven behind 9/11. By now, at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered. And to do that, you need to get caught.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital the government does not want you to know. Today, of course, we're focused not on the nation's capital, but on New York City, where we're hearing the Republican National Convention. There's also in New York City hundreds of thousands of protesters. Most of them are getting very, very little time on camera, despite the fact that it's one of the largest demonstrations in American history. They're just not being reported. How ironic, given that a couple dozen protested the Democrats in Boston. I guess the people just can't have a voice in America, and that's one reason why I'm playing all this week protest songs by country music artist Yikes McGee, and you can get this song and other anti-Bush songs at www.yikesmcgee.com, www.yikesmcgee.com. The song that I've been playing today is actually my favorite. It's the Song of Osama. Takes the voice of Osama bin Laden wondering, after all, he led the war on terrorism and killed 3,000 Americans, how come Bush keeps leaving him alone and going after Saddam Hussein instead? He just can't understand the Bushes. And we'll be playing that song throughout the program, and at the very end, I'll make sure to play one full round so you can hear the song in full. Well, it's time to talk about the convention last night, and of course, last night was the night of angry white men. You know, they had enough of liberal Rudolph Giuliani with his support for pro-choice and gay rights and gun control and all those horrible Democratic principles like protecting the environment and caring about civil rights. And, of course, they got quickly past McCain, who we all know never liked George Bush anyway, not since George Bush's front groups, Karl Rove, accused McCain of having illegitimate black children, being a treason, having committed treason in North Vietnam. Really extreme stuff. The irony, of course, is that Strom Thurmond actually did have an illegitimate black child, but hey, you know, they weren't after him. So they got rid of McCain, they got rid of Giuliani, they got rid of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, after all, has a history of groping so many women that it makes Bill Clinton look like a virgin. And they went to the heart of the Republican Party, the people who really give the fire to the Republicans, true red-blooded conservatives like Zell Miller and Dick Cheney. And I think it's striking and very interesting that the person they chose to give the most vicious, really, screed, if you will, against John Kerry was Zell Miller. Zell Miller, of course, is a former Democrat. He claims to still be one, I guess. But like many Democrats in the racist South, he's someone who's found the Republican Party more of his liking. And, you know, this really shouldn't surprise anyone. This has been a long passage in history. Zell Miller used to work for Lester Maddox, the fiercely segregationist governor of Georgia. And, of course, he himself said that the civil rights movement was a horrible thing. In fact, he complained about Lyndon Johnson, saying that Lyndon Johnson was a southerner who sold his birthright for a mess of dark pottage. So, you know, Zell Miller has good anti-civil rights credentials dating back a long time. But what's most interesting is that he really is the face of today's Republican Party. Because back in the 40s and the 60s, and in fact it's very interesting because we're going to hear from Zell Miller, we're going to play a lot of what he had to say. He would quote Wendell Willkie. Now, Wendell Willkie was a Republican who ran against FDR and was a liberal Republican. And, of course, Dwight Eisenhower would have been considered an extreme liberal by today's standards. Richard Nixon, more conservative than Eisenhower, but still, he cared about clean air. He was definitely a liberal by today's standards. The point is that what Richard Nixon realized was that the Republican and Democratic parties were changing. And it really all started back when Harry Truman signed in 1948 an order desegregating the military. Now, racists in the South, white racists, did not like that Truman was insisting that whites and blacks serve together in the military. They became very angry with him. And, of course, Democrat at that time, Strom Thurmond, led the charge out of the Democratic Party. He formed his own party, the Dixiecrats, ran against Truman for president of the United States. Of course, he was a hypocrite since he had his own daughter after he raped his 16-year-old maid. But that's another story. The point is that it started a new party. And the Republicans realized they had to reach out to the racists. And so over the 50s, the 60s, then you come, of course, to the Civil Rights era, where the Democrats very much become the party of civil rights. Truman began it. Eisenhower actually continued it to some extent. Then, of course, Kennedy and Johnson actually thought that black people should have the right to vote, actually thought that American citizens should have equal rights. This was so extreme that it drove all the racists in the Democratic Party over at first. They didn't want to become Republicans, the ancient party of Lincoln. They went to George Wallace, governor of Alabama, and you may be aware that in 1968, George Wallace won a number of states, in fact, in the Deep South. But Nixon understood that because the racists were no longer supporting the Democrats, that this was a great opportunity for the Republicans to pick up a lot of white votes, pick up a lot of votes in general. So he went toward the racists, he went to them, and we can see Democrat after Democrat becoming Republican. Jesse Helms, right? Strom Thurmond, of course, another example. All these Southern Democrats, until now, the racist party is the Republican Party. And Zell Miller has now joined, and you know, I guess it's only fitting that's the last of the old racist Democrats. In fact, there's only one left, and that's Byrd of West Virginia, and he's largely changed his tune, doesn't seem to be so racist anymore. But I do think it's sort of appropriate that this is the face of the Republican Party. And I think we should hear them. I think we should hear what Zell Miller says. I think we should take what he says seriously, or at least try to listen to his rhetoric and try to figure out what he's talking about, because it is angry, it is nasty, It is severe. It is what the Republican Party is all about. The Democrats, of course, tried to do a very positive convention to talk good about John Kerry. The Republicans know that George Bush doesn't have too many positive attributes that American people don't want 4 more years. And so they're going to bring Kerry down. And in fact, Zell Miller's speech almost entirely focused on John Kerry. He mentioned Kerry 16 times. He mentioned the candidate he was supposed to be supporting, George Bush, 7. Page after page of his speech is a screed against Kerry, very little mention of Bush. And again, that's exactly what we expected. That's what we predicted here on the Inside Scoop, that they're going to have to go negative because, well, there's very little positive going on. I'm going to play a lot of Zell Miller's speech through the hour today, and we're going to get on and talk about Dick Cheney's speech as well. If you want to call in, if you disagree with me, hey, bring it on. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can do as you always do and comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. Let's start with some of the beginning of Zell Miller's speech right here.
And there is no better example of someone repealing their private plans than this good man.
He's talking about Wendell Willkie.
Roosevelt, the critical support he needed for a peacetime draft, an unpopular idea at the time. And he made it clear that he would rather lose the election than make national security a partisan campaign issue.
Willkie ran against Roosevelt in 1940.
Shortly before Willkie died, he told a friend that if he could write his own epitaph and had to choose between here lies a president or here lies one who contributed to saving freedom, he would prefer the latter. Where are such statesmen today? Where is the bipartisanship in this country when we need it most? Today, at the same time young Americans are dying in the sands of Iraq and the mountains of Afghanistan, our nation is being torn apart and made weaker because of a Democrat's manic obsession to bring down our commander-in-chief. What has happened to the party I've spent my life working in? I can remember when Democrats believed it was the duty of America to fight for freedom over tyranny.
Wow, that's pretty strong stuff there, Zell. Pretty strong stuff. Let's go through it. Let's analyze what he said. Let's try to take his speech seriously. He says that he wants bipartisanship in the country. What is his definition of bipartisanship? Apparently, his belief is the Democratic Party should salute the president, believe every word he says, whether it's true or false, follow along like lemmings off a cliff, and never challenge his policies, even when they're running an election. They should always accept him, much as the Iraqis always accepted Saddam Hussein, much as the Soviets always accepted Stalin, and the Germans accepted Hitler. It's not bipartisanship, Zell says, to criticize the president. As he says, young Americans are dying in the sands of Iraq. It is not our place as Americans, Zell Miller says, to challenge Americans dying. We should support the president no matter how many Americans die. It's important. As he says, our nation's being torn apart and made weaker. Made weaker because we dare to criticize our president. Never criticize. Never criticize. You know, it sounds like something Stalin could have said. Never criticize. He goes on to say, I can remember when Democrats believed it was the duty of America to fight for freedom over tyranny. Really, Zell? You don't believe that Democrats want to fight for freedom over tyranny? Why is it that all the Democrats supported the war in Afghanistan? What's the deal here? You think Democrats support tyranny over freedom? Now listen to the beautiful, horrible irony of this, folks. He says the Democrats support tyranny over freedom at the same time as he says criticizing our president, criticizing our unelected leader, is not freedom, but tyranny. Here is a man advocating tyranny, advocating that we never criticize our unelected president, at the same time as he's saying that those who would criticize our unelected president are somehow advocating tyranny. I mean, it would be funny. It's the kind of thing you'd see on South Park. But this man apparently believes it. Shocking stuff. Let's hear more from his speech.
Time after time in our history, in the face of great danger, Democrats and Republicans worked together to ensure that freedom would not falter. But not today. Motivated more by partisan politics than by national security, today's Democratic leaders see America as an occupier, not a liberator. And nothing makes this Marine madder than someone calling American troops occupiers rather than liberators.
Well, that got a very strong reaction from the crowd. Nothing makes this Marine madder than calling American troops occupiers rather than liberators. That's an awful, awful thing. How dare, just because 98% of Iraqis think of Americans as occupiers and 2% think of them as liberators, it's awful. Nothing makes this Marine matter. Nothing makes Zell Miller matter than someone calling American troops occupiers rather than liberators. And this statement must really, really make Zell Miller seethe.
Or it has been said.
Hold on. Got to get it right here. This statement should make you seethe.
They were happy they're there. They're not happy they're occupied. I wouldn't be happy if I were occupied either.
Could you hear that? That was George Bush. George Bush just said in a press conference that the Iraqis aren't happy they're occupied. He wouldn't be happy being occupied either. Did you get that? I'm going to play it just once more.
I'm stepping up. And they were happy they're there. They're not happy they're occupied. I wouldn't be happy if I were occupied either. They do want us there to help with security. And that's why.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? President Bush said that Americans are occupiers. Well, he better watch out because he might incur the wrath of Zell Miller. And Zell Miller is very, very angry. And I want you to think as you listen to this extremely angry man, imagine if this speech were given by, I don't know, pick your dictator. You want to pick Saddam Hussein, you want to pick Fidel Castro, you want to pick Stalin, you want to pick Hitler. Pick your dictator and ask yourself if they might say the following words.
For it has been said so truthfully that it is the soldier, not the reporter, who has given us the freedom of the press. It is the soldier. Who has given us freedom of speech.
Did you catch that? It's the soldier. It's the soldier, not the press, that has given us freedom of speech. We don't need a free press in this country. We need more soldiers. More soldiers, less press. Wow. That and the Republicans cheer. And the Republicans cheer. But hey, now we know what the Republicans support. No dissent. Dissent is wrong. I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger was wrong when he said that dissent could be allowed in the Republican Party. But we all know that Arnold Schwarzenegger is not going anywhere in the National Party. He's just governor because he's in a liberal state of California. But true Republicans know dissent is wrong. So that's what Republicans stand for. And then Zell Miller turns and tells us what John Kerry stands for. And here, at least on the face of it, he seems to make a very strong argument when he talks about how John Kerry appears to have opposed various weapon systems. Let's listen in.
And no pair has been more wrong, more loudly, more often than the two senators from Massachusetts, Ted Kennedy and John Kerry. Together, Kennedy and Kerry have opposed the very weapon systems that won the Cold War and that are now winning the war on terror.
Okay, that's pretty strong. That's a pretty strong point that Kerry and Kennedy opposed the weapons that are winning the war on terror. And then he goes and he starts citing some of them, the B-1 bomber, the B-2 bomber, and he cites weapon system after weapon system, including something that supposedly helped us at Tora Bora, not mentioning the fact that we didn't succeed at Tora Bora. Osama got away because Bush didn't want to put too many troops there. He was focused on his next war, Iraq. But John Miller goes on. Let's hear the rest of his argument.
I could go on and on and on against the Patriot missile that shot down Saddam Hussein's Scud missiles over Israel, against the Aegis air defense cruiser, against the Strategic Defense Initiative, against the Trident missile, against. This is the man who wants to be the commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces. U.S. Forces armed with what? Spitballs?
Got that? Strong rhetoric. Very strong rhetoric. He says he opposed the Patriot missiles that broke up the Scud missiles over Israel. Some of us may remember that when they broke it up, they actually took one missile and broke it up into four, so it did four times the damage. Not the most successful military idea there. The idea was good, but unfortunately it was put into practice before anyone could study to see whether it worked or not. He talks about Strategic Defense Initiative. Of course, that's the name for Star Wars. That's the name for missiles to shoot down nuclear missiles, which is really the best way of fighting the Soviet Union, right? Because, and this, of course, was the idea on the morning of September 11th. The Republicans were fighting a Democratic proposal to take money from Strategic Defense Initiative and to move it into a war against terrorism. The Republicans said, nah, terrorism won't happen, they said on the morning of September 11th. No, we need to fight Soviet nukes, even though the Soviet Union hasn't existed for 10 years. Okay. And then he makes the rhetoric and says, U.S. forces armed with what? Spitballs? It's quite a strong charge. So I think we need to go through and see how, say, Dick Cheney wanted to react to some of these same missile things, right? I mean, it's important. Because you have to understand, it wasn't like Kerry was given the B-1 bomber, the B-2 bomber, and the Aegis ships and could say yes or no. That's not how bills work in Congress. We in Congress know that, and frankly, I think most Americans understand it when they think about it. These come in very large defense appropriations bills. And, you're not allowed to vote piece by piece. You have to vote on it as a total, particularly when you're not in the majority party. And Kerry voted down against some of these expensive, big authorization bills. What's interesting is that Dick Cheney, back at this time, and this is back in the 1980s, by the way, felt the same way. Cheney was a House leader in 1984, and he went on record attacking Reagan for not cutting defense spending. Quote, this is from Dick Cheney in the Washington Post, December 16, 1984. If Reagan doesn't really cut defense, he becomes the number one special pleader in town. The severity of the deficit is great enough that the president has to reach out and take a whack at everything to be credible. If you're going to rule out Social Security cuts and a tax increase, if you're going to hit those, you've got to hit defense. So, here are the rundown on the programs that Cheney tried to cut that Kerry backed. All right? I mean, you know, if you're talking about funding the military, just give these facts. And by the way, I'll tell you where I got it. I got it from John Kerry's website, johnkerry.com, but they're all sourced. All right? The Apache helicopter, Cheney was against, Kerry supported. Aegis ships, Cheney against, Kerry supported. Bradley fighting vehicle, Cheney against, Kerry supported. Same true with the Black Hawk, the B-2 bomber, the C-17 cargo jets, the FA-18 fighter jets, F-16 fighter jets, Tomahawk missiles, C-130 cargo jets. All of the FA-18 fighter jets, F-16 fighter jets, Tomahawk missiles, C-130 cargo jets. All of those things, Kerry supported and Cheney didn't. Now, hey, speaking of my audience, you may not like Kerry for this. But the point is, to argue that Kerry is weak on defense is just a lie. It's just a flat out lie. But I guess we shouldn't be surprised, coming from somebody like Zell Miller. Listen to talk about lies. Listen to what he says next.
Years of folks 20 years of folks can tell you much more about a man than 20 weeks. Let Paris decide when America needs defending. I want Bush to decide. John.
I apologize, folks, for the technical problems. I hope that you're still listening and everything's fine. We're going to go back and play again Zell Miller's quote, and then we're going to comment on it. So let's listen again to, and I'll play it, replay it again. A little bit of technical problems there. We're going to go back and hear Zell Miller's quote and then comment on it.
More than 20 years on every one of the great issues of freedom and security, John Kerry has been more wrong, more weak, and more wobbly than any other national figure. As a war protester, Kerry blamed our military. Twenty years of folks can tell you much more about a man than 20 weeks of campaign rhetoric. Campaign talk tells people who you want them to think you are. How you vote tells people who you really are deep inside. Senator Kerry has made it clear that he would use military force only if approved by the United Nations. Kerry would let Paris decide when America needs defending. I want Bush to decide.
Okay. I hope you caught that there. He says that 20 years of votes tell you more than 20 weeks of campaigning. And then he says Senator Kerry has made it clear he would use military force only if approved by the United Nations. Well, Zell, you really should listen to your own rhetoric. If it's votes that count, not rhetoric, then please tell me when Senator Kerry ever voted to only use military force if approved by the United Nations. He certainly did not vote that way. He voted for the war in Afghanistan, which, you know what, was not approved by the United Nations. And, of course, he voted for authorization for Bush to go to war in Iraq. Whether you agree with that or not, it was authorization. Sure, he wanted to work with the UN. He never said he would only use military force if approved by the United Nations, at least not in his votes. You know, don't try to find something he said 35 years ago. Look at his votes, Zell Miller says, and according to his votes, it's just not there. Kerry would let Paris decide? I mean, this is all part of this sort of French bashing. I guess it's fun, but there's absolutely no basis in truth. We're going to go to commercial break. In fact, I think what I'm going to do is just play the Osama song in full during the commercial break. And in that time, if you want to call in and comment on anything I've said so far, you're free to do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And we'll be right back with more of the extraordinarily angry speech by Senator Zell Miller right after this song by Yikes McGee, which he calls Osama's Song.
Hello, Mama, it's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good and I'm praying. I thought Bush would come looking, but I guess I'm off the hook. Even though I am to blame, he went off to Iraq, hadn't come back. I heard they arrested old Saddam Hussein. It's hard to decipher the bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war. Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5". In a land where the people are short, I just slip on a burka, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court. I should be in heaven behind 9/11. By now, at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered. And to do that, you need to get caught. Tired of waiting around for the bushes. I pass the time, I do what I can. Pray all day, make videos, hang out with the Taliban. We're working on the Taliban plan. If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas, you'd think they'd be able to follow that cable right down to the middle of Krakistan Pass. They smoked me out, they got me running, then they stopped coming. What made them give up on the chase? They better take a look around, get their nose to the ground, or they'll find themselves staring again at my face. And don't mention this to the Bushes, and I hate to talk out of school, but it seems kind of queer to leave me standing here. Is America that easy to fool? Is this the exception or is it the rule? I thought Bush would follow Mama. His big talk is hollow. I'm coming home now, will you fix me some chow? Wait, I think I'm losing my signal. Let me move over this hill. Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now? Hello, Mama, can you hear me now?
That was Osama's song by artist Yikes McGee, one of the many protesting the George Bush presidency. And, of course, Osama bin Laden in the song can't understand why he's leading the terrorist war, but the Bushes are leaving him alone. We're going over the convention rhetoric. If you want to join in, just dial in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking about the first speech last night, that of Zell Miller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Yes, this is Osama from Pakistan.
Hello, Osama. Did you like your song?
I love this song. It makes me feel so, shall we say, contemplative.
I see.
Serene.
I see. And you know, apparently you're fine and no one's bugging you.
No, and I want to thank Zell Miller for fostering all that hate and diversion from my cause. His check is in the mail.
Yes, apparently it's the Democrats who are the true threat to the nation. Osama, apparently you can't really be blamed.
Well, I want to watch out for those Democrats. That's why my 38,000 zombie computer votes in 12 different states will be on the way. Wait for George W. Bush.
Yes, I understand you have endorsed the current president.
I have to, because he saved my life at Tora Bora by letting all the bad U.S. Rangers come, and he kept them away from me so I could get away, and all the guys didn't pick up tax, they just throw me over the border to Pakistan.
And I understand that he's actually helped you in your movement, actually helped you recruit some people, is that right?
Yes, he is very, 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 very good for my cause.
Okay, well, just so we're clear, between you and me, Osama, I'm not a big fan of yours, and I'd like to see you captured or dead, but we may have to wait till John Kerry's president until that happens.
Don't let that happen. He might come and get me, even.
Yeah, well, I hope he does, but even though I really detest you, I do want to thank you for the call. Okay, let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hey, this is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian, did you see the speeches last night?
Yeah, of course I did. The one thing that kind of upset me is he says, you know, he opposed the B-1 bomber, he opposed the B-2 bomber, he opposed the F-14. Well, it's not like these were separate bills.
This exactly.
One bill that he opposed, and he opposed it because he didn't believe that we should be getting the money from where we were pulling it from. He thinks that we should take the tax cuts back and fund it with that, and I completely agree with him. I hate how Zell Miller said they don't believe there's any real danger in the world except that which America brings upon itself through our clumsy and misguided foreign policy. Well, you know what? I think we do have a pretty clumsy and misguided foreign policy if we, quote-unquote, mission accomplished in Iraq, and yet we're still losing Americans every single day.
You know, I think one of the best shows that I had here, and everyone's welcome to check way back to December of last year, I did a show called Blowback with author Chalmers Johnson, where he talks about the fact that these people that were fighting against Osama bin Laden, who armed him? Ronald Reagan. And who armed Saddam Hussein? Reagan and Bush. And also Dick Cheney sold him oil equipment. Who helped, the Shah of Iran? We did. Even Fidel Castro, in fact, we helped at some point. We are helping dictators. In fact, and if you want to know the ones we're helping now, I'll just name a few. Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, Saudi Arabia, Egypt. There's a very long list. We helped dictators in the past. And we got the blowback when the people hated Americans. Now we continue to help dictators, and I just don't see anyone praising George Bush for helping the dictator of Equatorial Guinea just to get oil from it. But nobody's talking about this, and I frankly wish John Kerry would talk about it a little bit more. The campaign hasn't called me. But, I do want to say, though, Brian, on your point about the voting, there's two different things we're talking about. On the $87 billion, which I'm going to get to in Dick Cheney's speech, you're absolutely right. Kerry voted for it in order to pay for it. I think that Zell Miller's probably talking about these votes in the 80s, the ones where both Cheney and Kerry were against a lot of government spending because they were trying to cut back on the budget at that time. But I'm not quite sure because he doesn't specify it. The point is that all those things I mentioned, all those weapon systems I mentioned, actually Kerry supported and Cheney didn't, which is very interesting and I think kind of surprising to a lot of people.
Cool. Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you for your call. Let me go back to Zell Miller's speech and play the last bit of it and then talk about the incredible blow-up. If you didn't see it, you got to go to MSNBC.com. The incredible blow-up between Zell Miller and Chris Matthews. But first, let's hear the last snipe at John Kerry. Again, Zell Miller spends very little time praising Bush. There's not much to say. Most of his time is sniping at Kerry. That's how negative campaigns work. Let's hear the last bit of it.
More wobbly than any other national figure. As a war protester, Kerry blamed our military. As a senator, he voted to weaken our military. And nothing shows that more sadly and more clearly than his vote this year to deny protective armor for our troops in harm's way far away.
Actually, I guess I just owe Brian an apology. Brian may have been talking about this part of the speech, where it's absolutely right. This is the protective armor. That is the $87 billion. So Brian's absolutely right on that. That is the most recent vote. And a quick history there for anyone who doesn't know. First of all, we sent our troops into Iraq without protective armor. Bush was anxious to get them out fast, who said you can't roll out a new product in August, you got to roll it out in September. They had to get the war in Iraq going before the midterm elections because they were using it to, attack the Democrats and win back Congress. So they had to get that war rushed, didn't have time to think of things like body armor, and they went out there, and the troops were out there unprotected, and a large number died. Because they didn't have the armor. They were doing things like sending letters home to their parents. Mom, Dad, could you send us some body armor? And parents were like making it in shops and shipping it over to Iraq. Bad mistake. And one that Democrats and Republicans rightly criticized the president for not having the protective armor. So the Democrats come up with a bill and it says, we're going to provide protective armor for our troops in Iraq. It's going to be paid for by the people who earn more than $400,000 a year will lose $5,000 from their tax cut. Okay, they're already getting about $100,000 from their tax cut. They'll only get $95,000 from their tax cut, people who make over $400,000 a year, in order to pay for body armor for our troops. Bush threatened to veto it. He said, in effect, that our troops should die before multimillionaires lose their tax cuts because that tax cuts are more important than our troops. He threatened to veto it. Okay? And in fact, Kerry voted for it. This is the $87 billion appropriations. All right? The bill that Bush threatened to veto. The bill did not pass. The majority of Republicans were against helping our troops if it would cost multimillionaires money. Instead, they wanted to put it on credit card debt. They wanted to make sure that young people, future people, poor people, the middle class that has had such a much higher tax burden under Bush, they had to pay for it. That, of course, is the bill that Kerry voted against. If there's one issue that the Republicans pick on Kerry on, it's that so-called flip-flop, and I would hope it's the one issue that Americans understand. And it's too bad, because there's so many other issues I'd like to talk about. But at the very least, people should know that is it's just flat out wrong. Let me just finish up Zell's speech here.
George W. Bush understands that we need new strategies to meet new threats. John Kerry wants to refight yesterday's war. President Bush believes we have to fight today's war and be ready for tomorrow's challenges. President Bush is committed to providing the kind of forces it takes to root out terrorists.
Really? Is that why George Bush wants Star Wars and he didn't want counterterrorism funding? Is that why he threatened to veto bills to buy up loose nukes abroad? These are the kind of forces we need to fight terrorism. Things to protect our cargo, protect our nuclear chemical plants. Bush doesn't want any of that. He wants Strategic Defense Initiative. He wants Star Wars. He wants to stop against massive nuclear missile attacks. Who's fighting yesterday's war? Who's fighting tomorrow's war?
No matter what spider hole they may hide in or what rock they crawl under, George W. Bush wants to grab terrorists by the throat and not let them go to get a better grip.
But as we just heard from our caller, Osama, George Bush precisely let him go so that he could go get Saddam Hussein. So what is Zell talking about? Is Zell completely off his rocker? I mean, this is a guy who, back just 3 years ago, in 2001, said of John Kerry, this is a quote by Zell Miller of John Kerry, "My job tonight is an easy one," he said, introducing Kerry, "to present to you one of this nation's authentic heroes, one of this party's best known and greatest leaders." Zell Miller said of Kerry in 2001, quote, "In his 16 years in the Senate, John Kerry has fought against government waste, worked hard to bring some accountability to Washington. Early in his Senate career in 86, John signed on to the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Deficit Reduction Bill. He fought for balanced budgets before it was considered politically correct for Democrats to do so. John has worked to strengthen our military, reform public education, boost the economy, and protect the environment." So was Zigzag Zell lying then? Or is he lying now? And who is the flip-flopper here? One thing I think we can be clear about Zell Miller, in addition to his incredible anger, is that he has flipped out. Not just because he has threatened Chris Matthews with a duel, and you really should check that out at MSNBC.com. Listen to him go off the rocker there. But just listen to some of the things that Zell Miller has said recently when he fell off his rocker. Tim Russert asked him about the 9/11 Commission. And what he said is that Zell Miller questions the panel's usefulness. "I believe it will ultimately play a role in doing great harm to this country. For its unintended consequences, I fear, will be to energize our enemies and demoralize our troops." Did you get that? Telling the truth about a mistake that Bush made energizes our enemies. We should never, ever let the American people know if our president screws anything up, ever. Because you don't need to know what the president's doing in a democracy. Just salute and follow along. How dare the commission help our enemies by challenging our president's actions? Russert asked him again, you believe this? And Zell Miller responded, "There's no doubt that it energized our enemy at the time when it was first set up. And no doubt there's a lot of politics involved." This was a unanimous commission, folks. 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats. When did he say this? August 1st of this year. He also said that he strongly disagrees with McCain, Giuliani, and Schwarzenegger about their pro-gay rights, pro-abortion rights, pro-gun control policies. He, in fact, said that McCain doesn't share American family values for voting against the constitutional amendment to ban states from allowing gay marriage. One of the toughest questions that Tim Russert asked Miller is when he said, but on defense and intelligence authorization bills, the ones in the 90s that they're complaining about with Kerry, Russert said, you have the same voting record as John Kerry. It's written here in the transcript, long, awkward pause by Miller. I didn't try to cut. Now, ultimately, he came along and voted for some. This is a man who truly has flipped out. I don't know how else you describe it. In 1992, he actually cared about social issues. He cared about economic issues. He said in 92, quote, we can't all be born rich and handsome and lucky, and that's why we have a Democratic Party. My family would still be isolated and destitute if we had not had FDR's Democratic brand of government. So I'm not sure what made Zell Miller flip out, but I do know this. If you're going to talk about a flip-flopper, clearly the greater flip-flopper is Zell Miller. Again, if you want to call in, if you disagree, just dial 877-57-SCOOP. I want to move on to Dick Cheney's speech because Cheney as well is spending most of his time talking against Kerry. They seem to know that there's very little that they can say in support of the president, and so they're going to take Kerry down. And the other thing that's interesting is that this convention is solely about September 11th. Right? September 11th, September 11th, September 11th. John Stewart had a wonderful one where he had Giuliani talk about September 11th some 12 or 13 times, just one right after the other. Now, it's not about the victims of September 11th, let's be clear. In fact, Fernando Suarez del Solar, it's been reported in Salon.com, he went said he wasn't very political until his son, a 20-year-old Marine named Jesus, was killed in Iraq. And since then, he went to Madison Square Garden. He got a media pass, and he actually had a sign that said, Bush lied, my son died. Delegates immediately called security. Security rushed him out. Republicans jeered at him. Get out of here. You're unpatriotic. And Mr. Del Solar said, quote, I pay with my son's life for my freedom of speech, but you can arrest me. It's okay. And the police, to their credit, refused. Now, again, are you really saying that Del Solar and his son are unpatriotic? Are Republicans really saying that? Apparently, Zell Miller is saying exactly that. Now, I want to get on and talk about Dick Cheney's speech, and some of this may have to go on till tomorrow. And Sunday, we're going to have one last discussion of the convention, so we'll get in all the last calls and everything else you want to talk about. First, I guess I do need to play a commercial. So we'll go to a quick commercial break and be right back with some of Dick Cheney's speech right after this.
Hard to decipher the Bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war. Mama, it's hard to hide, because you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere, or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign, so their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
He went off to Iraq and come back. I heard they arrested old Saddam Hussein. It's hard to decipher the Bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war.
That is Osama's song by the artist Yikes McGee, one of the many people that are protesting this president. And in honor of the protesters, who really aren't getting too much press play, unfortunately, I'm playing protest songs all this week. And I'm going to get, in the last few minutes remaining, I'm going to get to a little bit of Dick Cheney's speech. I do want to read some of the very interesting comments that many of you have added to the blog, and I think that's important. Rick writes, I'm dismayed at the lack of coverage of the protests at the RNC. Even the liberal hosts that are the RNC, including Air America, aren't covering the protests very well. Well, Rick, you got to get me on Air America. It says they've just been giving more airtime to the conservative freaks. I think the real story is out in the streets and not listening to the predictable, scripted propaganda from the right. Well, Rick, the answer is to call Air America or email them. All of you can do this and say, get Mark Levine on. He talks about the protesters. He even plays protest songs. And if I were in New York, no question, I would be interviewing the protesters. But I'm here in Washington giving you the news from New York. I should tell you, by the way, that I myself have protested a Republican National Convention. I did it back in 1996. And that was, of course, a time when Clinton and Gore were running sky high, very well, for re-election. And they threatened to arrest me, because I dared to have a sign that said Clinton Gore at the Republican National Convention. That apparently is enough to get me arrested, and at that point I threatened to sue them and all kinds of things, and they backed down. But just so you know, I myself is sort of an old protester. Rod writes, can we discuss Zigzag Miller's blowing up at Chris Matthews? Yes, I did talk a little bit about this. Matthews caught him in his fabrications, and old Zell was only disappointed that he couldn't engage his questioner in a duel. I think that bit of acid was very newsworthy. What a silly cracker. That said, Kerry, don't wait on this stuff, Rod writes. They're pitching hard balls at you. Stay sharp and swing away. And Rick writes, when talking about all the defense systems that Zell Miller was complaining about that Kerry didn't support, Rick writes, it should be noted that Kerry also opposed the Intercontinental Ballistic Nerf Defense Shield. Very good point. Just because he voted against a weapon system does not mean it was the best weapon system at the time. And Rick also points out how scary it is to see the huge numbers of police with assault rifles and body armor just keeping dissenters in line. And we have to thank Bush for bringing us a police state. Brian from New Jersey writes that not allowing citizens to see and hear their president speak without a signed statement of support, that arresting protesters for being outside designated zones, and having a media who accepts these free speech zones is the fastest way to fascism. The droves of police in New York are not there to protect us from terrorists. They are there to condition us into believing this is acceptable and that a police state is nothing foreign or bad. If they truly cared about protecting us from terrorism, maybe they would put a lockdown on our borders, check every single container that entered our country. Sadly, it seems if we the people are the enemy of the current administration and its treachery to have a so-called free media who refuses to show what is really going on behind the scenes at the White House. Think of this is radical? Just read the Patriot Act. Rick goes on to write, Zell's right. We don't need to energize our enemies. George W. Bush does that enough on his own. We all know that GW likes going it alone. I do want, though, to, just in the last 5 minutes, to read a little bit of Dick Cheney's speech. We're going to do more of Dick Cheney's speech tomorrow. We'll probably spend most of tomorrow focusing on Bush's speech. We'll do a convention wrap-up on Sunday for any issues that are left over. Cheney, of course, just like the others, spends 90% of his speech on September 11th and 80% attacking Kerry. Right? I mean, again, there's not so much he can say about George Bush except some really comedy at the end, which I'll play. But he spends very, very little time talking about the economy. And it's all of just a couple paragraphs in a speech that's that fills a full, you know, two-thirds of a page long. I do, though, want to play that small portion where Cheney talks about the economy. I do think it's very interesting. Let me play some of it.
Opportunity also depends on a vibrant, growing economy. As President Bush and I were sworn into office, our nation was sliding into recession, and American workers were overburdened with federal taxes. Then came the events of September 11th, which hit our economy very hard. So President Bush delivered the greatest tax reduction in a generation, and the results are clear to see.
Now, did you get that? Did you get that? All right. He says that the nation was sliding into recession. Very clever word choice, given that it wasn't in a recession under Clinton and it was in a recession under Bush. It was sliding into a recession, he says. All right. And American workers were overburdened with federal taxes. So what did Bush do? Did he cut taxes for American workers? No. No, he cut them for people that inherit hundreds of millions of dollars, for people that get dividends, for people that make, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. They got the great lion's share of the tax cuts. Did he cut sales taxes? No, they went up, in fact, because he cut so much federal taxes that the states didn't have any money. They had to raise state taxes and sales taxes. He didn't cut Social Security taxes, which are paid by American workers. No, he paid taxes. He cut taxes paid for by the corporations, by the CEOs. And what was the result, Dick Cheney? What was the result?
See. Businesses are creating jobs. People are returning to work.
Really? Businesses are creating jobs and people returning to work? Then why is it the worst jobs record since Herbert Hoover? He goes on to talk about home ownership, which is high only because the Federal Reserve cut interest rates, but that certainly doesn't help. In fact, tax cuts, you should know, increase long-term interest rates. I know this as an economist because it runs up the national debt.
Our nation has the best health care in the world, and President Bush is making it more affordable and accessible to all Americans.
I'm sorry, Dick Cheney, you're wrong. According to the World Health Organization, France, that evil country that you dislike so much, has the best health care system in the world, the most accessible for the average person. Just not right, Dick Cheney, but never let facts get in your way. Oops. Just playing music there for a minute.
And there is more to do. Under this president's leadership, we will reform medical liability so the system serves patients and good doctors, not personal injury lawyers.
And if that means that a patient has to suffer just because a doctor left a scalpel inside them, they should suffer for the cause. No one should ever, ever be able to sue for an injury. If a doctor cuts off the wrong leg, then use the other leg, you wimp, you wuss, you girly man, right? Because doctors should have a right to basically kill you because they're doctors. Now, please, don't get me wrong. Don't send me all those angry emails. 99% of doctors don't commit malpractice. They're very good. And you know what? 99% of doctors aren't sued either. But the idea that we're somehow going to make medical care better by not allowing people to sue doctors, I've never understood that. That's really, though, a very minor thing. Cheney goes on and on and on then to attack John Kerry and to talk about September 11th. And then he ends with a joke, something I found really, really hilarious, and I'll play it for you.
George W. Bush is a man who speaks plainly and who means what he says. He is a person of loyalty and kindness. And he brings out those qualities in those around him. He's a man of great personal strength. And more than that, a man with a heart for the weak and the vulnerable and the afflicted.
Did you find that as funny as I did? A man with a heart for the weak and the vulnerable and the afflicted, right? Cheney is saying Bush cares about the weak, the vulnerable, and the afflicted. I hope they do a Saturday Night Live sketch on that, because to me, that was the funniest part of the speech. That's all the time we have. We will be going over President Bush's speech tomorrow. We're going to be talking about our last speech here. And the song tomorrow is one last Yikes McGee song titled He Lies and He Lies and He Lies. And we will play Bush's speech, we'll do commentary, and of course we'll take your calls. And let me just conclude by quoting John Kerry, as I'm starting to conclude every hour by quoting John Kerry, because this quote to me is so profound. And it says, he said, "Don't love your country, right or wrong. That's like loving your mother, drunk or sober. Love your country when it's right, and when it's wrong, put it right." This is Mark Levine signing off.
Hello, Mama, it's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan. I'm eating good, I'm praying. I thought Bush would come looking, but I guess I'm off the hook. Even though I am to blame, he went off to Iraq, hadn't come back. I heard they arrested old Saddam Hussein. It's hard to decipher the Bushes. They'd rather go settle that score. Now they're allied with lackeys attacking Iraqis while I run the terrorist war. Yeah, Ma, I run the terrorist war. Mama, it's hard to hide, 'cause you know I'm 6'5", in a land where the people are short. I just slip on a burqa, head on down to Loya Jirga, poke around all day at the Sharia court. I should be in heaven behind 9/11. By now, at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered. And to do that, you need to get caught. Tired of waiting around for the Bushes. I pass the time, I do what I can. Pray all day, make videos, hang out with the Taliban. We're working on the Taliban plan. If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas,